Following content is provided by MIT OpenCourseWare under a Creative Commons license. Additional information about our license and MIT OpenCourseWare in general is available at ocw.mit.edu.
So for me, this is the third and last major topic of the course. The first one was initial value problems, stability, accuracy. And the topic two was solving large linear systems by iterative methods and also by direct methods like reordering the equations. Now, topic three is a whole world of optimization. Essentially, that means, in reality, it means you're minimizing or possibly maximizing some expression. And that expression could be a function of several variables. We could be in the discrete case. So we've got, maybe I just emphasize that we have discrete optimization. So that's in Rn, discrete in n dimensions. And that will include some famous areas as single, as small subsets, really, of the big picture. For example, one subset would be linear programming. So that's a very special but important case of problems that are where the cost is linear, the constraints are linear, and has its own special methods. So I think that's worth considering on its own at a later point in a lecture. Another bigger picture, for us actually bigger, will be quadratic programming, where the quantity that's being minimized is a quadratic function. Now, what's good about a quadratic function? Its derivatives are linear. So that leads us to linear equations, but always with constraints. We don't have a free choice of any vector in Rn. We have constraints on the vectors. They have to, maybe they solve a linear system of their own. You know, we might be in 100 dimensions, and we might have 10 linear equations that the unknowns have to solve. So in some way, we're really in 90 dimensions, but it might, you know, how should we treat those constraints? Well, you know that Lagrange multipliers play a role. Okay, so there's a big area, very big area of discrete optimization. Then also, there's the continuous problems, where the unknown is a function u of x, I'll say, or u of x and y. It's a function. That's why I refer to that area as continuous optimization. And the word that's often used, well, first, you always want to get an equation, which is in some way going to be derivative equals zero, right? When we learn about minimization in elementary calculus, somewhere along the line is going to be an equation that has something like derivative equals zero. But of course, we have to account for the constraints. We have to ask what is the derivative of what when our unknown is a function. I'm just going to write down a part, a topic within mathematics that this is often expressed as. Calculus, that would be derivative, but in the case for functions, it's often called the calculus of variations. So that's just, so you see that word. There are books with that title. Okay. So the idea of what is the derivative when our unknown is a function and the objective that we're trying to minimize is the integral of the function and its derivatives, all sorts of possibilities there. Okay, so that's a very quick overview of a field that we'll soon know a lot about. And I was trying to think where to start. And I think maybe better be discreet. And I want to get to the system of equations that you constantly see. So let me use as an example the most basic problem, which comes for, maybe I'll start over here, for the problem of least squares, which I'll express this way. I'm given a matrix A and a right-hand side B, and I want to minimize the length squared of AU minus B. Okay. So that would be a first problem to which we could apply calculus because it's a straight minimization and I haven't got any constraints in there yet. And we could also apply linear algebra. And actually, linear algebra is going to throw a little extra light. Okay. So just what am I thinking of here? I'm thinking of A as being M by N with M larger than N. If A is a square matrix, then this problem is the same as solving AU equal B. And, of course, it will always reduce to that case if M equals N. But to focus on the problems that I'm really thinking about, I'm thinking about the case where N is the number of unknowns. It's the size of U. And M, the larger number, is the number of measurements, the number of the data. It's the number of equations. And it's the size of B. So we have more equations than unknowns. And you've met least squares before. I hope that maybe even in these few minutes, though, a little new light will be shed on least squares. Okay. So here's our problem. And calculus could lead us to the equation for the best U. So U stands for U1, U2, up to UN. There are N components in that vector U. Okay. And maybe you know the equation. I guess I hope you know the equation. Because it's such a key to so many applications. And if I just write it, it will sound as if problem over. Let me write it, though. So the key equation, and then this comes up in statistics, for example. Well, that's one of 100 examples. But in statistics, this is the topic of linear regression in statistics. Let me write down, they gave the name normal equation to the equation that gives U directly. And do you remember what it is? The normal equation, the equation for the minimizing U, which we could find by calculus. It involves the key matrix A transpose A. Let me call U hat the minimizer, the winner in this competition. And the right-hand side of that equation is A transpose B. So I won't directly go back to derive it, although probably I'm going to end up deriving it because you can't help approaching that equation from one side or another. And as I say, one way to approach it would just be to write out what that sum of squares is, take its derivative, and you would get linear equations. Okay. So again, U hat stands for the U that gives the minimum. Okay. And this A transpose A, of course, so I'm putting in a little bit of linear algebra. This matrix A transpose A is obviously symmetric. And its important property beyond the symmetry is that it's positive definite. Well, yeah, I have to say positive definite. There's always a proviso, of course. I haven't eliminated the degenerate case yet. A has M many, many rows, a smaller number of columns, and let's assume that those columns are linearly independent, so that we really do have N unknowns. If those columns were, say if all the columns were the same, then AU would just be multiplying that same column, and there would really be only one unknown. So I'm going to say that A has rank N, by which I mean N independent columns. And in that case, that's what guarantees that this is positive definite. Let me try to draw an arrow there. Just this is the same statement. If I say about A that the columns are independent, then I'm saying about A transpose A that it is positive definite. And that means all its eigenvalues are positive, it's invertible, certainly, all its pivots are positive. It's the great class of matrices. Okay, now, but I don't really want to start with that equation. I want to, because here's my point. Optimization, a key word that I better get on the board, maybe up here to show that it's really important, is plus the idea of duality. And the effect of duality, if I just give a first mention to that word, is that very often optimization problems, there are really two problems. Two problems that don't look identical, but in some important way, they both, each problem is, gives our, each problem is a statement of the task ahead of us. Okay, and what are the two problems, the two dual problems in this basic example of these squares? All right, here's a good picture. Here's a good picture. Let me put it on this board so I can recover it. Okay, so minimize AU minus B. So I think of the vector B as being in, where it's in M dimensions. So it's a picture, I'm in M dimensions here. Now, what about AU? AU, where will AU go in this picture? So AU is all the candidates AU, multiply A by any vector U, so that means AU is a combination of the columns of A. The possible vectors AU lie in a subspace. So this is a subspace of all possible vectors AU. And it's only n-dimensional. This is an n-dimensional subspace because I have only n parameters in U, only n columns in A. So the set of all AUs is a plane, an n-dimensional plane within the bigger space RM. And another name for that subspace, that plane, is in 1806, I would call it the column space of A. Or the range of A is another expression that's used. All the possible AUs, and here's B, which isn't one of the possible AUs. So where is U hat? Where is the best AU, the best AU now? The one that's closest to B is, now comes another central word in this subject. If I draw it, I'm going to draw it here. That will be my best AU, which I'm calling AU hat. That's if the picture seems reasonable to your eye, this is the vector that's in the plane closest to B. And what's the geometry here? See, that's what I want to see, a little geometry and a little algebra, not just calculus. So the geometry is that this vector B, what's the connection between B and that vector? That's the closest vector, right? When we're minimizing the distance. This distance here, I might call that the error, vector E. This is as small as possible. That's being minimized. That's the difference between that. This is Pythagoras here. We have, and of course, when I say it's Pythagoras, I'm already saying the most important point, that this is the projection. This is a right angle here. That's a right angle. The closest AU, which is AU hat, which is this vector, the way geometrically we know it's closest is that the line from B to the plane, that's where the line from B perpendicular to the plane. This line, this error vector E, is perpendicular to the plane. Okay. And there's a good word that everybody uses for this vector. Take a vector B that's not on the plane. What's the word to look for the nearest vector in the plane? Projection. So this is the projection. And projection, orthogonal projection, if I wanted to be really emphasize the fact that that's a right angle. Okay. Right. So that would give me a geometric way to see the least squares problem. Now comes the point to see the dual problem. The dual problem will be here if I draw the perpendicular subspace. So that's a subspace of what dimension? This contains all the vectors perpendicular to the plane. So I have this, if M is 3, so that we're in 3 dimensions, and our plane is an ordinary 2-dimensional plane, then the dimension is 1. That's the perpendicular line. But thinking bigger, if we're in M dimensions, and this plane is n-dimensional, then this is going to have the true dimension of this is m minus n, which could be pretty substantial. But anyway, that's the perpendicular subspace. If this is the column space of A, I can figure out what vectors are perpendicular to the columns of A. That's really what I mean. I've drawn it as a line, but I've written up there its dimensions so that you see, I just don't know how to draw. Like, a bigger subspace, and yet you would have to see that all the vectors in it were perpendicular to all of these vectors. You see what I'm saying? That if we were stuck in thinking in three dimensions, if I make this a plane, I can't make that a plane. If I make m equal 3 and I make n equal to 2, I'm only got a line left to be perpendicular. But in higher dimensions, there are lots of dimensions left. Okay, so what's my dual problem? My dual problem is find the vector E in this plane closest to B. In other words, and by the same reasoning, what I'm saying is take the vector B, project it over to this plane, project it orthogonally, that same right angle is going to be there. This plane, I've said what's in this plane, but I haven't written it yet. But you could tell me already, what is this? What's that vector? It's the projection. One answer would be, it's the projection of B onto this perpendicular. So you see, we're really taking the vector B and we're separating it into two components. One in the column space, the other perpendicular to the column space. So just tell me what that vector is. It is E. Same guy. In other words, E is the solution to the dual problem. Maybe I call this projection P for the best vector in the plane. E is the best vector in this subspace, and they add up to... So we're really taking the vector B, and we're splitting it into a part P in this space and a part E in the perpendicular space. And if I just write down the equations for that, I'll see what's cooking. Okay. Well, I guess what I have to do is remember, what are the equations to be in this subspace? To be perpendicular to the column. So I can't go further without remembering what's in that subspace. Okay. So everything in that subspace is perpendicular to the columns of A. Let me just write down what that means. Let me use the letter maybe Y for the vectors in that subspace, and E for the winning vector, the projection. Okay, so Y will be the vectors in that subspace. So those vectors are perpendicular. So this is the subspace of Y's, all the Y's in here. And now, what's the condition? So Y is perpendicular subspace. What do I mean? I mean that Y is perpendicular to the columns of A. And how shall I write that? Perpendicular means inner product zero. So I want to change the columns into rows. So and take the inner product with Y and get zeros. Zero, zero, zero. So this is column 1 transpose to be a row. I'm trying to express this requirement in terms of a matrix, and so to be perpendicular to the first column, I know that means that the inner product of the first column with Y should be zero. The inner product with the second column with Y should be zero. The nth column, its inner product with Y should be zero. So what matrix have I got here? What's the condition on Y? It's simple and beautiful. Well, what matrix is that? It's A transpose. So that perpendicular thing is completely expressed by the equation A transpose Y equals zero. Okay. That tells me the y's, and of course E is going to be one of the y's. It's going to be, I could say y hat, but I've already named it E. It's the particular one that's closest to B. The y's are everybody all along here. This is the null space of A transpose. So in words, I would call it that perpendicular thing is the null space of A transpose. Okay. So when you did linear algebra, you'll remember that. That the null space of A transpose, let me write it, is perpendicular to the column space of A. The fundamental theorem of linear algebra, right there. And now we're just using it again to see what are the two dual problems here. So the primal problem, the one that we stated first, was this one. So this, I'll call this the primal, P for primal. And what is the dual problem? The dual problem is the problem about the y's. Not about the U's at all. That's the beauty of this duality. One problem is about U's, and it's a problem that ends up projecting on the column space. The second problem is about Y's. It's the problem that ends up projecting onto this perpendicular space, and it was a projection. So the dual problem is just minimize the distance from B to Y, but with the constraint, with A transpose Y equals zero. So there is the other problem. So I hope your eye can travel between the, well, let me write underneath it the primal again. Minimize AU minus B squared. Okay. Right. Okay. And this is the one whose solution is E, and this is the one whose solution is, U. And the projection P, U hat, sorry, and the projection P is A U hat. And I guess what I'm trying to say is that somehow there's a very important connection between the two problems. First of all, the two problems use the same data. They use the same vector B, they use the same matrix A. And notice that in one problem it's A, and in the other problem it's the transpose appears. That's very common. We'll see that always. But there's something a little different about the two problems. This problem was unconstrained. Any U was allowed. This problem was constrained. Only a subset of Y's, only that subspace of Y's was allowed. This is a problem with n unknowns. This is a problem with m minus n unknowns. M minus n variables once we've accounted for the constraints. But I guess this is one thing I'm thinking about. Often the problem will come with a constraint, and maybe I'll do a physical example right away. The problem comes to us with a constraint. In other words, suppose you were given this problem. How would you deal with it? That's like the first question in optimization, or one of the central questions. How do you deal with a constraint? If we minimize this, of course, the minimum would be when y equals b. But that's failing to take into account the constraint on y. So how do you take constraints into account and end up with an equation? That, you know, we can see in this picture that somehow or other we ended up with this normal equation, but actually I would rather end up with a equation. I'd rather end up with a primal dual equation. I'd like to end up with an equation for the best u and the best y. So what will that be? So what I need now two equations that will connect the best u and the best y, and probably this is going to be the key. This b is a u hat, right? So this will be one of my equations, and this will be the other. Let me see if I... Well, okay, maybe I don't know what to do now. Here I've called it Y. Over here it's E. I've got myself in a corner. I should call E Y hat. Would you like that? We have in mind that it's E, the error in the primal problem. But just to make the notation for the two problems consistent, let me call the winner here Y hat, the winner here U hat, and what's the relation? So let me just, here I'll write down the relation between the two. Well, it's over there. Let's see. Is that right? Yes? Y hat plus A U hat is B. And A transpose Y hat is 0. That's it. That's it. Here we have... That's the pair of equations that solves, that connects the primal and the dual, solves them both, solves each one, and is really, it's a system, you could say it's a block equation, the block matrix being identity, A transpose, 0, the unknown being the Y and the U. The right-hand side being the data, which in this case was the B. I guess what I want to do is emphasize in what's coming for the month of April the importance of this class of problems. And it's dealing with the primal and the dual at the same time. It's important for so many reasons I can't say them all on the first day. That would be a mistake to try to say everything the first day. But let me just say something. That linear programming, which is just one example, that it doesn't fit this because it has inequality constraints. But you maybe know that the number one method to solve linear programs is called the simplex method. Well, it was the number one method for many years. For many problems, it's still the right way to do it. But a new method called the primal dual, or at least that's part of its name, primal dual, it's essentially solving the primal and the dual problems at once, and there are inequality constraints, of course. I'm going to stop there with linear programming and give it its turn later. In this perfect example here, we have only equations. And how many do we have? We have m plus n equations, because y is m unknowns, u is n unknowns. I have altogether m plus n equations, m y's and n u's, and they come together. Okay, now, could you just connect back with what we absolutely know, that's a normal equation. Where is this normal equation coming from? Okay, so here's the normal equation. And we know that that's got to come, right, out of the thing. How does it come? Suppose I have a block system, 2x2. How do I solve it? Well, actually, that's, in a way, the big question. But one way to solve it, the natural way to solve it, would be elimination. Multiply this first row by a suitable matrix. Subtract from the second row to produce a zero there. In other words, eliminate y and get an equation for u hat. All right, so what do I do? How do I do it? I multiply. So would you rather look at equations or matrices? I've tried to keep the two absolutely together. Let me look at the equation. What shall I multiply that equation by and subtract from the sect? I just want to eliminate. I want to get y hat out of there and leave just an equation for u hat that we will totally recognize. So what do I do? I multiply that first equation by A transpose, thanks. All right, so I multiply this first equation by A transpose. Let me just do it this way. And now what? A transpose Y is 0. Now I use the second. Well, this is one way to do it. A transpose Y is 0. What am I left with? The normal equation. Well, it shouldn't be a surprise. We had to end up with a normal equation. Maybe you would rather, and I actually, what I intended was to make it sound more like Gaussian elimination. Multiply this row by A transpose, subtract from this row, I still have identity A up here. When I do that subtraction, I get the 0, that was the point. And here I get A transpose A, subtracted from 0 is minus A transpose A. Y hat, U hat. And, of course, I had to do the same thing to the right-hand side. And when I subtracted this, the B was still there, but it was minus A transpose B. So, now I've got, in the second equation, the second equation only involves u hat, and of course, when I change its signs, it's our friend. A transpose A u hat equal A transpose B. So, this is, maybe you would say, the natural way to solve this type of system, but I want to emphasize, throw it away. I really want to emphasize the importance of these. Let me clean it back up again to what it was. Of these block systems. Now, what name are we? They need a name. We have to give some name to this type of two-field problem. And I guess then in the next month I'm going to find examples of it everywhere. So here I've found the first example of it in ordinary old-fashioned least squares. Okay. And so what am I going to call this? I'll give it a couple of names. Saddle point equation. Saddle point system, maybe I should say. and I have to explain why do I call it saddle point system. In optimization, I could call it the optimality equation, just meaning that's the equations for the winners. In the world of optimization, the names of Kuhn and Tucker are associated with these equations, the Kuhn-Tucker equations. And there are other names. We'll see. But let me just say for a moment, why saddle point? Why do I think of this as a saddle point problem? In a way, yeah. Why? See, the point about A transpose A was that it was positive definite. This is A transpose A. Now, what's the corresponding issue for this matrix? So this is my matrix that I'm constantly going to look at. Matrices of that form are going to show up all the time. I've said probably in 1808-5 where these appear, but then we don't do much with them. Now we're ready to do something. I didn't appreciate their importance until I realized in going to lectures on applied mathematics that if I waited a little while, that matrix would appear, that block matrix. It just shows up in all these applications. And one of our issues will be how to solve it. Another issue that comes first is what's the general form of this? Can I jump to that issue just so we see something more than the single problem here? Let me put in the matrix as I intend, as it comes in applications. Some matrix A, rectangular, right? It's transpose. A zero. Often a zero. But what's up here is not always the identity. I want to allow something more general. I want to allow, for example, weighted least squares. So weighted least squares, if you've met least squares, it's very important to meet its extension to weighted least squares. When the equations AU equal B are not given the same weight, there's a weighting matrix, often it's a covariance matrix. I'm going to call the matrix that goes in here C inverse. So this will be then an important class of applications. This is pretty important already when the identity is there, but many, many applications produce some other matrix that is usually, it very, very often is symmetric positive definite in that corner, like the identity is. But a key point, which I have to make today, is the whole matrix, either this one or this one, it is symmetric, right? That matrix is symmetric. Is it or isn't it positive definite? If I do elimination, do I get all positive pivots? It's a matrix of size n plus n. So I'm asking, are all its eigenvalues positive? But I don't want to really compute eigenvalues. Also, in a lot of cases, I would. Finding the eigenvalues of this matrix would be the singular value, lead me to the singular value decomposition, absolutely crucial topic in linear algebra that we'll see. But let me just take it as a linear system. If I do elimination, okay, what are the first M pivots? Okay, let me not be abstract here. Let me be quite concrete. Let me put the identity here. Let me put some matrix. Oh, I want the matrix here to be I better put a bigger identity, just so we see the picture. Here I'm going to put an A transpose, which might be 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. When I write numbers like that, you'll realize that I've just picked them out of the hat. Here's the transpose, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Here's the zero block. I'd like to know about that matrix. It's symmetric. And it's full rank. It's invertible. How do I know that? It's the invertibility, of course, the identity part is great. I guess I see that this is invertible because, you know, I've ended up with A transpose A, and here my A has rank 2. Those two columns are independent. They're not in the same direction. 2, 3, 4 is not a multiple of 5, 6, 7. That's an invertible matrix, and this process finds the inverse. Elimination finds the inverse. It's the pivots I want to ask you about. What are the pivots in this matrix? Okay. So, what do I do? The first pivot is a 1. I use it to clean out that column. The second pivot is a 1. I use it to clean out that column. The third pivot is a 1. I use it to clean out that column. And what's the next pivot? What do I have? Of course, now some stuff has filled in here. And what has actually filled in there? So this is the identity, if I can write it fast. This guy is now the 0. This guy didn't move. And what matrix filled in here? Well, just what I was doing there. Elimination is exactly what I'm repeating with numbers, what I did there with letters. What's in here is minus A transpose A. And I could figure out what that I could do if I was fast enough. I could do 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 times 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and I would get, you know, I get this little 2x2 matrix that sits there. With a minus sign. And that's the point. That the pivots, of course, what's this first number going to be? 4 plus 9 plus 16, 29? Is that number? So a 29, a minus 29 sits right there. And that's the next pivot. The next pivot is a negative number. Minus 29. And the fifth pivot is negative. So what I'm seeing is a matrix. This matrix has 3 positive pivots and 2 negative pivots. I associate that with a saddle point. Positive pivots describe for me a surface that's going upwards. This surface is going upward. I'm a surface in 5 dimensions here. And it's going upwards in 3 directions, but it's going downwards in 2. And the point at the heart of it, the saddle point, is the solution to our system, is the Y hat, U hat. So, what does this, well, one conclusion is, that I wouldn't be able to use conjugate gradient methods, for example, which we've just learned how powerful they are, on the big matrix, because it's not positive definite. It's symmetric. I could use some other available methods. I couldn't use conjugate gradients. So if I wanted to use conjugate gradients, I'd better do this reduction to the definite system. Okay, that's a little longer than I intended to spend on the simple example. But if you see that example, then we'll be ready to move it to the wide variety of applications. So let me just note that one section already up on the web called saddle point systems solves differential equations that are of this kind. So we'll come to that. And we'll come to matrix problems too. It's a very, very central question, how to solve linear systems with matrices of that form. In fact, I guess I could say it's almost the fundamental problem of numerical linear algebra, is to solve systems that fall into that saddle point description. Okay, I'll try to justify that the importance I'm assigning to this problem in the next weeks. Okay, thanks for today, and I'll turn off volume.